times all alone. My times of trouble and pain. I used to think there was no one else who felt the cold and rain. Then I woke up to humanity. We were standing hand in hand, and I knew we were one again across this great land. I stand in the sun under the stars.
Good morning. Hey, hope you're having a great holiday. Great holidays. Happy Hanukkah. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa. Whatever you feel good about, whatever makes you feel good, I want to wish it to you. I hope you're really enjoying this time, spending it with some family, friends, or people that people you care about. But again, being quiet, because, you know, we just passed the solstice, which I keep mentioning. But really bears a lot of mentioning this year, just to remind you to kind of go slow. You're going to may set some New Year's resolutions. Go slow. Don't overdo it. This really is the time that we need to be very wise with our bodies. I mean, the whole year we want to be wise with our bodies, but during the phase of that is called, well, let's say the winter for ease at this point. During the winter is when there's the greatest danger, and so we want to be particularly careful about that. You know, it dawned on me, you know, because we just passed the winter solstice, and often when I'm speaking, and if you go to an acupuncturist, you'll hear about what's often called the five elements, and I'm going to speak about that for a second because I want to relate it to the season that we're in. And there's a lot of confusion, really, about that term elements, and that's because it shouldn't have been used. So someone who was looking at this Chinese idea of five phases be a much better description, five phases, but they translated probably because of the four elements of Greek philosophy, right? They had the four elements that they said the natural world was made of, and that was fire, water, air, and earth. And this is completely, absolutely not the same as the Chinese idea of five phases. It's not about the building blocks of the material world. It's that everything in the universe, literally everything, is constantly changing. And the only thing that is consistent is change. It is the only consistency. You are not the same person you were when I started speaking. You know, you had this massive turnover of cells in your body. You're thinking different thoughts than you were. You're hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many, more miles away from where you were when the program started. So it's all changing. It's all moving. And at any given time, there is a phase of existence that is passing through. You know, you get new stars, and then they become mature stars, and then they burn out stars. And so there's this phasing, and it's consistent, right? There's a consistency to that. And the body and the emotional being are the same. It's constant change. So you can use the five-phase, it's often called a theory, but it's really a description more than a theory, I would say, at this point. And you can analyze anything, and you can put anything into that. You can look at your life. You can look at businesses. When I took over as president of the third oldest acupuncture school in the country, and people said, well, you've never been in academia or college administration. What are you going to do? I said, it's really simple. I'm going to do what I do with everything. I'm going to analyze it from a TCM perspective, which doesn't just apply to the human body. It applies, the human body is a microcosm of the macrocosm of the universe. And so I spent several months making only a couple minor emergency changes, but I just talk to people. I talk to patients. I talk to students. I talk to the doctors. I talk to the administrators, and to see what people felt about all of this, what was working, what wasn't working, and of course it was different for different people. But the one thing that stood out is there was a massive qi stagnation. The qi of the school wasn't flowing freely anymore. It was being stagnated, and actually it was stagnating in one person's office in particular. So everybody that came in on the administration, or if any student came in to talk to anybody, they had to basically pass this one person's desk. The time clock was behind this person, so everybody that clocked in had to go there. I, as the president, had to walk by this person so where they could just kind of grab me or, you know, do whatever they wanted to do. And so there was this massive stagnation that needed to be opened so that the qi could flow freely and not get, you know, when the qi stops flowing, then everything stops flowing. Emotions get stirred up. There's no life to the school at all. And so then looking at the other parts of, you know, the flow going through the school. But the most important thing was looking at the phases. Where was the school physically, and where did it need to go in order to survive? So you talk about families, digestion, anything can be talked about in a five-phase theory. When I do coaching, or which I don't like that term particularly, but when I do business consulting, I will always analyze a business based upon the five elements kind of as a starting point. And it's one of the reasons that a discipline that's at least 4,000 years old can, in many cases, still be more accurate and functionally useful than the latest in business or the latest in biomedicine. Really, I'm serious. There are whole ranges of conditions that Western medicine just has a really difficult time even seeing it as a condition that we, it's totally apparent. Now, of course, that works otherwise. You know, they see things that we don't. But it's very, very powerful system. And there are hundreds of studies that would back this up. And then we look at Ayurvedic medicine, which had very similar concepts in many ways. And Buddha, for example, 2,500 years ago, expressed the number of times that the universe blinked off and on in the wink of an eye, or the blink of an eye, right? Well, and then it was, you know, just a few years ago that scientists at UC Berkeley measured that. He said, yes, these atomic particles change back and forth, kind of turned on, turned off, X number of times per second. And when you take those numbers and really measure how long it takes for the average person to blink their eye, you'll find that they're exactly the same number within, you know, some margin of error, because there are different lengths of time to blink the eyes. But basically, it was the same thing. And Buddha got there not by figuring it out, but by experiencing it directly. And so a lot of these ancient things, practices, are really based on experience. So one major problem in life, and this pertains to right now, is when we have not or are not willing to move on to the next phase of any process. You know, you see people going through midlife crisis because they're not willing to experience where they actually are at, or you find people having tremendous grief as they age, things like that. And you find some younger people being really depressed because they're not older. And so you see this disharmony, which we would often call depression or grief, could happen if we aren't cognizant of and willing to be present in the phase that is appropriate for us and preparing for the next phase, right? I mean, we talk about retirement. Well, retirement is kind of the fifth phase that we're going to talk about. It's the water phase of life in most cases. So kind of go through these phases again, because our next phase that we're going to go into will be a wood phase. This is the spring. That's when there's high growth, lots of outreaching, lots of discovery, a time to reconnect with people and with the world and with your new ideas. I'm coming out with two series of trainings. One will be live and one will be webinar aimed at acupuncturists and herbalists on internal functional medicine from a TCM perspective. So I'm excited about that. But it's starting in the spring, right? It's not starting in December. But during December, I'm gathering, I'm closing things in, I'm contemplating, I'm feeling what I'm going to be doing with it. So then in the summer, we get this period of growth. It's very intense. It's consuming. It's hot. It's going outward. It's the time to get out and do stuff, be active, you know, even more active than in the spring. Just get out and play sports, etc. Then we go into the earth phase, which is abundance, nurturing, centering, grounded. The sound of that is a sing-song voice, and eating. That's when we should really eat. Not so much, you know, in the spring we should eat a lot of vegetables, a lot of green. Wood is the color, you know, is represented by green. So we really need those vegetables to clear out all the heaviness that we've accumulated over the winter. Then we have earth, which is, as I mentioned, the abundance. That's when we should eat a little bit more, kind of preparing for the winter. And then metal, which is the phase of the fall, we should then be moving more to the interior, tranquility, balance, spirituality, inspiration. And then we get to the season that we are currently in, the season of water, the phase of water, I should say, the season of winter, where it's closing. Things close. It's the most yin time of the year when things are, has been an accumulation, and there's not a lot of energy to move outward. So this is where we need inner strength, when our faith can get challenged, when we have to have faith. It's a time where we need the most courage, because in the phase of water, we tend to have the most fear. A lot of fear can arise, and we see that in my practice around from the time of that the clocks fall back from daylight savings time up into January. Those are the most fearful times for my patients, also the times of the least health. So, again, if you're going to be starting a business, kind of keep that in mind, and for your life, you want to keep that in mind, and so that you can stay in the correct phase and acknowledge the phase as you move forward. One other thing I want to talk about in terms of the phases is what's called the CF. Now, this is mostly a term that's particularly used by what are called five elements acupuncturists. So these people place most of the emphasis on the five phases, the five elements, whereas in my practice, for example, which is a TCM practice, a traditional Chinese medical practice, it's part of what I do. And then there are many, many other aspects that I bring to bear, many other tools that I bring to bear, and I pay less attention to the phases in my treatment. I do pay attention, but it's not the core of it. And so the CF, some people call it central focus, some people call it causative factor, and some people call it constitutional factor. How do you determine what that is? Well, I had a delightful woman, Mary Hughes, that was teaching this class, and she's talking about the wind. And this woman stands up really quickly in the back of the class during the discussion of the wind. She says, "What do you mean? Everybody hates the wind. Everybody hates the wind. I don't even know why you're having this discussion." Well, that completely clarified the five-phase positioning of that person. They hate the wind. That's because they have a lot of liver wind themselves, and I'm not going to get into what that is right now, but it's a stirring. It can lead to stroke, for example, is one of the manifestations. But when there's wind externally, it's going to make someone that's windy internally feel doubly bad. Like for me, I tend to have some spleen sheet deficiency with dampness. I'm damp. And so when it's humid outside, I suffer far more than many other people. It's just a very miserable time for me. So they hate the wind. That's liver wind. They stand up really fast, angry. There's a lot of life to it. That's liver fire or liver qi stagnation, this fieriness, and they need to express themselves. But then there's this level of extreme judgment. Now, I want to make a distinction between discernment and judgment, and this is a very often confused thing. In fact, we're seeing that with our whole culture right now, with the political correctness that is just overwhelming and in many ways destroying a lot of the, in my opinion, the beauty of our culture. So to acknowledge or see something as it is discernment. There doesn't have to be any judgment whatsoever. This person has blonde hair. This person has blue hair. This person has red hair. That's a discernment. That's an observation. Now, you can have judgment, but that doesn't, discernment doesn't apply, doesn't mean that. You have someone with black skin, you have someone with yellow skin, you have someone with white skin, etc. That is simple discernment, right? You're just walking down the street and someone walks toward you and they have black skin and black hair. That's discernment. Judgment is another thing entirely. It is a value placed upon that whatever is there and then giving it, like giving it a scale, putting on a scale from good to bad. So discernment is very powerful, and that's what a healthy liver and gallbladder do. They help create discernment. When they're out of balance, you get extreme judgmental behavior. And so it could be a gallbladder qi stagnation, liver depression qi stagnation, etc. They can kind of go together. But this is a very livery, gallbladdery person that is out of balance. Okay, so how do you work with it? Someone comes into my office, and there's been many times when I'll hear someone at the front desk from my office, and I'll hear them just really being nasty to the person at the front desk. I don't want to fill out your paperwork. This is ridiculous. You know, why do you ask these stupid questions, right? And I'm going, okay, we're going to stop this. But as soon as the person walks into my office, all I have is empathy. That is just what is manifesting as part of their physical, mental reality, at least at this moment. And so I realize that this is not a linear event. And their symptoms and their signs and the disease entities are going to arise out of this very thing, this central or constitutional factor, and then any imbalances that have been created in it. There's no right and wrong in it. There's no right or wrong when I'm treating people. It just is what it is. But as a human being, I will often I'll get hooked on that for a minute. As soon as I see them, I'm unhooked. You know, this is what I need to treat. And there are no absolutes. So let me give you an example of starting with the element as a central factor. And I'll take someone who has maybe a metal, M-E-T-A-L, as a central factor. And some things that you wouldn't, you know, if you didn't know this medicine that we're doing in Chinese medicine, it wouldn't make sense to you. So some things that can go along with a metal CF would be long-term grief. A wheeze, maybe a slight wheeze, maybe they aren't even aware of it, but you'll get this little wheeze when they speak or when they breathe. A tendency toward lung problems historically, often a history of childhood asthma. They will have a tendency toward constipation because the liver and large intestine are paired organs, and a tendency to be dry. Their skin will tend to be dry, etc. But they could still have mucus. That's a different. That's not having moist skin. That's having an overabundance and buildup of phlegm. Okay, so another one that I like to use a lot when I'm working with students is talk about how the same emotion would manifest in different people with a different CF. And let's take anger. So someone that's a wood type, a livery person, they're going to be in your face. I mean, almost violent. They're probably not going to hit you, but they could. And they'll say things like, don't ever do that or again, or I'll do this, right? And there's a need for power over. This is the general. The liver is often likened to the general. And so when the general's in balance, they have great powers of discernment. They can see what's occurring. They can send their troops to the right place. They give really clear orders. But when they're out of balance, they want to have power over, because they're used to having power. But in this case, they, instead of creating power in the world and in themselves, they will often want to have power over someone else. Now, if it's fiery, this will show up a lot in relationships. So you get this really intense, exploding anger, but it's not violent at all. And they'll say things like, how could you do that? And the communication will often miss the mark. And so this one is fast, it's intense, and it burns out quickly. It's like, all right, let's go to a movie. The liver person isn't going to get over it. They may keep it forever, but they're at least going to keep it for a while. Where with the fiery person, it's up, and now it's burned out. The log's been burnt up. With earth, you get whining. Why aren't you there for me? Why do I always have to do that? Poor me. And so this is when it's out of balance, the CF is one of martyrdom. It's really about a lack of getting what I need. Metal phase, which is fall generally, but the metal phase is cutting. So if you're talking to a liver person and they disagree with you, they're going to argue with you about it. They've got to win the argument. With a metal person, this is all BS, and they'll just turn and walk away. I mean, I've had metal people literally in the middle of a conversation just turn around and walk away. It's just like, excuse me? And so that's that cutting, that sharpness of the metal. A lot of sarcasm and very dismissive. It's like this is all BS, as if you'd know what you're talking about kind of thing. And then water, again, now these are the out of balances of these elements. Water in balance, you'll see great courage. You know, I mean, real courage to stand up for what they feel is right or what they believe is correct. They'll really want to help others in a very powerful way, not in a fake way. But when they're out of balance, they'll have a bravado to cover up their fear. They might even get defensive. Like you say, how are you doing? They go, great, everything's great. Why are you asking me, right? There's that defensiveness, you know, and there'll be worry. And again, what the treatment looks like is, from this standpoint, is you balance the central element. If it's too strong, you sedate it. If it's too weak, you nourish it, and you kind of balance it and regulate it. And whenever the central element, or CF, is out of balance, then it will throw other things out of balance. When the liver is out of balance, as I talked about the liver a bit up there, it will overact on the spleen, and the spleen will become weak. And then you'll see balance problems in the spleen and in the liver. So anyway, thanks for bearing with me. I just wanted to talk about that a bit because it's often misunderstood. And the key is the five phases are a better term than five elements, because it's not about the elements like in Greek times. Give me a call. I'd love to get your calls this morning. The phone number here is area code 415-431-8255. That's 415-431-8255. Before I forget, Catherine from my office, who is our rejuvenation specialist, is still offering a special 333. So if you do three treatments over 3 months, you get 30% off of the third treatment. And she wanted me to mention, because this is the time of year as people are moving into their New Year's resolutions, that they often decide to kind of clean things up. You know, they want to start a new diet. January is by far the busiest month in any health club, as everybody's in there, you know, kind of getting with it. But we find that a lot of people will want to get their circulation moving after the winter. And so she wanted me to talk about our Vigo massage, which is a Mayan abdominal massage. It's not just abdomen. It's also working on the back and other things. But it's to get the lymphatics moving, the circulation that doesn't have a pump, right? It only moves through muscular movement or by things like dry brushing. And I don't usually get enough movement in the winter, so things get stagnant. The lymphatics get stagnant. She also does cellulite removal, which is astonishing, seeing before and after pictures for that. And she also does cupping for the lymphatics and to open up the lungs, as well as facial treatments. So if you're interested in any of those, give my office a call, and Catherine will be happy to set something up for you. So I heard we have a caller on the line. Hello.
Good morning, John.
Hey, Kat, how you doing?
Okay.
Cool.
I would have called in last week, but it sounded like there's some people on that had some stuff to say, so I stayed off. But first, my condolences to Eric, definitely a loyal and aware advocate for his mother.
Yeah, wonderful guy.
Yeah. So I just want to bring that up. And also, now, you were bringing up our organic herbs, or like just how contaminated, how safe some herbs are.
Yes.
And some of my wife's best, most consistent customers for her organic farm are herbalists looking for high-quality organic herbs. Part of it is lack of chemicals. Another part is simply the vitality and quality that arises from plants growing in really healthy soil. There's been this debate about whether plants grown hydroponically can be considered organic. And the consensus seems to be, at least among the people I know, that yes, that maybe the hydroponic plants don't have as many toxins in them as non-organic, but they don't have all that soil biology, and there's a lot of interaction between various layers of microorganisms in the soils, you know, mycorrhizal fungi and so forth, that really help the planet be much more nutritious. And so there is a difference.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. That's a great point. Really, really, really good point.
Yeah, people are thinking that you simply need to have a separate certification. It's organic but hydroponic, so, you know, call it hydroganic or something.
Yeah, but, like you said, it's certainly going to be, hopefully, at least if you're using water that's not contaminated,
right.
It doesn't have too many heavy metals, you should have a less toxic plant for sure. But then,
right.
As you said, it's all, the plant can't have something in it that wasn't in the soil,
right.
That it's that it's living in. And the Chinese have been real sticklers about that historically. You know, there were certain, every herb had a place. Now, some of them, it was pretty widely spread, but there are some, like, there's only tiny, tiny regions where it is really considered an acceptable quality of the herb, and it's really tightly watched. Now, of course, you know, when there's lots of counterfeits, and we see this all through herbalism and supplements. You know, I mentioned this on the radio. I got a real awakening. One of our reps, I had to sign about a 30-page, literally, agreement that I wouldn't violate their advertising practices and that I wouldn't put things on the internet in certain ways, etc. And I said, what's the big deal? And he said, well, we have a very large department that checks out supplement quality, and we will go online and buy our own supplements and test them.
Uh-huh.
And he said, the number of counterfeits, you wouldn't believe how high it is.
Oh, yeah.
Extraordinarily high. And so, yeah, and that really woke me up. You know, I should have realized that. And then when you get to herbs, of course, you got to be very, very careful. And I'll have people say, well, you know, can't I go get this in Chinatown? I said, yeah, if you want to play roulette, that's fine. You know.
That's right. The same thing goes, like, I think you mentioned that there's a restaurant there that you can go there to get juk. It's made from, they'll put all kinds of stuff in it. And I don't know how trustworthy their ingredients are, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, I doubt that, for example, if you're getting liver, yeah, I'm doubtful that it was, you know, grass-fed and really, really high quality, et cetera, right?
Right.
And so it's one of the things I love. My son is a chef, not my young son, but my middle son, at a restaurant in Oakland, I'll even mention it, is called A Côté, and they've been there for a long time, and they get their meat either, they butcher it themselves usually, but they will, you know, get it from Nyman Ranch and other places that are even better than that, and they make all of their own sausage and things like that, so they know what's going in the ingredients, and boy, you can taste the difference.
Uh-huh.
You really can.
Yeah,
yeah.
My wife brings home produce that she's grown. It is so dark green, and it's just so beautiful. It just looks like it was cut from emerald, and just you don't see that in the store.
No, you just. But my mouth just started watering. I was like, oh my God, that sounds so good.
But now last week you were talking about some things to help with cold, flu and colds. One thing that I found really good if I'm feeling a chill is to get into a far infrared sauna if you can get one, and bake yourself until you've driven out the feeling of chill and had a good sweat.
Yes, absolutely. And that, again, is a classic Chinese thought, the idea of what they called wind cold. Now, it's important to remember that they were an agrarian culture. They didn't have much heat, so they got a lot, and they were often working in rice paddies, you know, in the water. And so that was a very common thing for them. And they had a whole half, basically, there's this Bible of Chinese herbal medicine called the Shanghanlun, and a related book called the Jingwei. But that book, there are six levels of illness, and that book, half of it is devoted to one of the six elements, and that's exactly what you were mentioning, which is this idea of wind cold. And I once talked about I was being interviewed on a radio show, and I was supposed to have like 20 minutes or half an hour, and they ran over, and I ended up with about 2 minutes. And she said, okay, well, what would you do? What would you recommend? You know, if you feel that cold sensation in your body and you're shivering, I said, well, my great-great-great-grandteacher had something he called the two-hats cure. And she said, well, what's that? I said, well, when he started feeling that wind cold attack, he had a four-poster bed, and he would stick his hat on one of the posts. He would bundle up in a sleeping bag, a sweatshirt and a sleeping bag, and he would drink bourbon until he started sweating, or drink bourbon until he saw two hats. And then he'd start sweating, and the cold would be gone. So that was his two hats cure. But I think the far infrared sauna is probably much healthier.
This is probably. We bought a portable one some years ago for about $140. It was on sale. So keeping an eye out for a portable far infrared sauna may be affordable. So I know it could be hard to get to, but if you keep an eye out for a portable or a foldable one, you may be able to get it at a good deal.
That's fabulous. Yeah. Cool. Good tip.
Yeah. But if I'm feeling chilled or unwell, it may take 45 minutes in the sauna before I really start sweating. It's amazing to me sometimes just how much heat I can be subjected to before I actually start sweating.
Right. Well, what happened? And so the Chinese have this whole series of herbs for wind cold. And one of the classics is guajitong, and that's to be used at certain times. And then there's mahuangtong, or ephedra formula, right, which is used at others, depending on the amount of perspiration that is occurring and whether you have to really kickstart the perspiration or not, because it just everything closes down. The pores close down. And sometimes it's very difficult to start that sweating process, which is a critical element in that process.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That's great. Thank you. That's a great contribution.
Thank you. And now, two things about... I need to get into your office to get Ching Hao, because I'm going to Kenya, and I want the anti-malarial protection. So I keep forgetting. I'm going in the beginning of February, and I know that I have to start taking it like 2 weeks before I go.
Yeah,
so I've got to get in there next week.
You probably read
or so.
That the woman that created artemisinin, basically, which is the concentrated Ching Hao, she won a Nobel Prize.
Yeah, I heard that. So congratulations to her.
Yeah.
And
cool.
Separate
well,
issue. My wife has been having some lower back pain that radiates into her legs, and there's some achiness and tingling into her left arm. Now, it might be due to muscle or joint strain because she does, you know, the farm work and so forth, but she also had her yellow fever vaccination a few weeks before this set in, and she has used an immune-boosting topical for a spot on her cheek that was acting a little cancerous. So it might be some sort of an immune kick-up or something, some reaction to both vaccination and that topical she was using.
Always suspicious, you know, after a vaccination, when some things pop up, and I mentioned on the radio, I don't know, a couple weeks ago, I guess, that I'd seen three patients who can't move their arms, basically. They cannot lift their arms out to the side after getting a flu shot.
Right.
And so it's, you know, really, got to be careful.
Right. I told her it might be time to go see you, but I wasn't certain this is more an internal medicine thing or a body use injury thing that Jenny would treat.
Well, so you've got upper body and lower body.
Right.
So that makes it more likely that it's an internal medicine thing.
That's what I figured.
Yeah. You know this, but I wanted to mention in general. Tim O'Shea, who's a very interesting fellow, he wrote The Sanctity of Human Blood, and he's kind of on the extreme end of vaccination, like, you're a complete fool if you ever do it, kind of end of it, you know, the opposite of the kind of CDC. But he had some very interesting stuff that he talked about recently, and it's really looking at allergic responses to vaccines. And one of the big side effects of yellow fever is people with egg allergies can have a problem with it. People with thymus disorders, which is would cause abnormal immune cell function, it can be a real problem. So there are known problems, but there are a whole bunch of problems that never really get talked about. And O'Shea, and again, be prepared if you check out his stuff. He's very bright guy and has done a lot, a tremendous amount of research. But he was talking about peanut allergies and other allergies, and he says, again, I don't know if these figures are accurate, but everything else I've looked at of his has been pretty accurate. He said, you know, before 1900, peanut allergies were essentially completely unheard of. Nobody had peanut allergies.
Right.
And today about 1.5 million kids in the United States alone are allergic to peanuts. I mean, you know, you see all these things about EpiPens and, you know, the cost and everything, but nobody's really looking, or few people are looking at, well, why is this suddenly a problem? I never knew a kid with a peanut allergy growing
right.
up. Literally, nobody. And now my son can't take nuts to, you know, to his plays, to many other things. And peanut allergy is the number one cause of death from food reactions or anaphylaxis. O'Shea cites a book by Heather Frazier, was published in 2011, and the title is The Peanut Allergy Epidemic. And they're talking about a particular class of vaccine adjuvants, which she calls excipients, is almost without a doubt the cause of that. And they go back, you know, in the beginning of the time that we started using vaccines, there wasn't a problem. These things still didn't occur, even after vaccines came into use, but because they used lancets instead of hypodermic needles. So then the hypodermic needle is bypassing all of these defense mechanisms and putting it deep, deep into the body and into the bloodstream. And there, at that time, when that started to happen, after they started using hypodermic needles, they coined a new disease called serum sickness. So this is before allergies. They called it serum sickness, and often there was shock or fainting. Occasionally people would die. And at that time, they didn't attempt to cover it up. You know, things were a little more open. And there was a Dr. Von, I don't know how you pronounce his last name, but Pirquet, P-I-R-Q-U-E-T, I think. And he's the guy that actually coined the term allergy. And so he was a leading researcher looking into this whole serum sickness, because it was the very first mass allergenic phenomenon ever. And so he was very interested in it. And he traced it to the use of hypodermic needles. And so he recognized that vaccines had two primary effects. One is immunity, and one is hypersensitivity. And he says they are inseparable. Yes, you can induce immunity to many conditions. That's often overhyped. But you also will create hypersensitivity, and that is often underhyped. He says you can't really separate them out like that.
Sort of like there's no such thing as side effects. They're just effects.
They're just effects, of course, right? The body is getting supercharged. It's getting hypersensitive so that it can react quickly if there is, you know, a problem, you know, if you're exposed. And so it's very interesting as you follow this forward. And then there was a Dr. Richet, who is the one who came up with the term anaphylaxis. And he said that this is always a response to having intact proteins that bypass the digestive system. So this can happen in leaky gut, where the proteins actually leak and come in contact with the immune system, or from injections, where the intact protein gets into the bloodstream, and then you have anaphylaxis. And again, you know, any foreign protein in the blood universally triggers allergic reactions, and that's in all animals. But one of the things about food anaphylaxis is that really sudden violent reaction always requires an initial sensitization, like the injection. Usually the injection in and of itself causes certain things, but then you'll become allergic to a lot of foods. Well, he goes on forward and talks about the deaths from penicillin, which was very common. About 12% of the population was allergic, but in general it was worth it because it was, you know, saving people's lives. But doctors were aware there was a problem. But the big change came when peanut oils were introduced as the vaccine excipient in the mid-1960s. And I just became aware of this from one of my patients a little while back. And there was an article in the New York Times, 1964, that would never get printed today. And he was describing how a newly patented ingredient containing peanut oil was added as an adjuvant to a new flu vaccine in order to prolong the immunity. And, of course, he goes into all the horrible reactions that came out of that. Now, one of the things, there was in the early 70s, there was a major study that was done on peanut allergies to try to figure out what was causing them. And just after that study, and a result of the amount of attention the study got, they changed the laws on what manufacturers had to disclose. And they now do not indeed have to disclose all of the ingredients in their vaccines.
Okay.
Which I wasn't aware of.
All right.
And so, you know, if you get the physician's desk reference or you look at the insert labels, it doesn't, by law, any longer have to contain all of the ingredients. So, it's kind of weird.
Yeah.
And we look at all of these conditions that are, you know, just taking off. And O'Shea at least says that, you know, got to be very careful. He says don't do vaccines. I say you got to be really careful.
Right.
Make sure you're healthy when you get them. Watch out for the problems it can cause, et cetera. So.
Yeah, I mean, if I thought of it, I didn't think of it that when she was applying like that immune boosting topical to her cheek, that it might exacerbate whatever this problem is. And I brought that up to her the other night, but I wish I had thought of it before. But you know, it's perfectly possible she needed to apply it in any case. So.
Right. Kent, I was watching the news last night, and it's an uncommon, it's a station not many people watch. I consider it a little more, I think they report more news, and you know, they have a little less politicized. But anyway, I'm watching it, and one of the news articles is, as we have known, that this year's flu vaccine is less than 10% effective.
Yes.
Now, it's probably less than that because they gauge effectiveness more on whether they can test an immune response. So it may be zero, but it's no more than 10. So they go through this long thing about, oh my gosh, this is going to be a really bad flu season, and the vaccine doesn't work. But the good news, we still have lots of vaccines, so go get some.
I was like, they actually
what parallel universe am I in? Okay, it doesn't work, but go get it, right?
Now, when I heard years ago that taking the flu vaccine was correlated with like Alzheimer's or dementia, on an ongoing basis, I stopped taking it, and now I just make sure my vitamin D is very high. Oh, I forgot to tell you, my vitamin D came out, believe it or not, 98.6 this year, which is
perfect.
Yeah, yes, and I had a nice surprise. My HDL was at 87.
Whoa! Holy caramba!
Yeah, I was surprised. It's the highest I've ever seen on anybody. So,
I've seen it higher on a few women. I've never seen it that high on a man.
Right. And, you know, I think the only thing that really changed was that I started allowing myself to eat more butter because I'd seen someplace that the shorter the chain, the triglyceride, the more it helps your HDL.
Yes, that's quite
accurate.
And
the most common source of short-chain triglycerides is dairy.
So I think I was talking over you there.
Oh, sorry. Huh?
What did you say last?
Oh, the most typical source for short chain triglycerides is dairy. So, like butterfat.
Butterfat, yes. I was able. One of the health food stores in town started carrying raw you know, unpasteurized, non-homogenized milk, and I brought it home for my son, and it was like, oh, my God, what is this?
Yes.
We call that milk, right? And it's just a totally different food, right? It's just amazing. You get that butter fat in there, and it's just, it's totally different.
Oh.
And of course, as we know, pasteurization completely destroys the milk.
Yeah, and one of our farm neighbors is, they actually have... They provide raw, you know, grass-fed, purely grass-fed milk, and we happened to get a quart of it, and it was positively orange. It was just, there was so much, you know, good grassy, you know, stuff in it.
Yeah, and of course, the orange is the evidence of the very high levels of good quality fats.
That's right.
I remember my dad, you know, when I was a kid, you know, and he'd say, oh, my God, I don't know how we can eat these eggs. Look at these pale yolks and stuff, and I thought I was a teenager, I thought he was nuts, you know, as we tend to think about our parents. It wasn't until I, you know, finally had some real pastured eggs, and it was like, oh my God, those are bright orange.
Yes.
Right? And that's the high quality fat content in it.
There is a brand at the store. It is not organic, but it is like a open, you know, I don't know, sort of like open raising of the chickens, so they get to go out and scratch and peck and all that. And the yolks are definitely more colorful.
You know,
I don't recall a dozen eggs,
and I couldn't remember, and I had that happen, but then I couldn't remember what brand it was or what store I bought it in.
Right. So. Well, I mean, like, I'm talking about, you can buy it, you know, Raley's and a number of places. It's a mostly black container with white lettering, and they brag about how they have at least 100 square feet per chicken, and they have lots of time to go, you know, and rotate on pastures, and so they're very proud of that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it should
be cool.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, I got to get going.
All right. Thanks, Kent.
Thanks.
Good to hear from you.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. Bye-bye.
Okay. It's the flu vaccine stuff is really trippy watching that. It doesn't work. It does cause problems, so make sure you go get it, right? It's like, man, what's wrong with this picture? So again, if you want to really, really see the dark side, check out O'Shea's book. If you want to see the bright side, just go to your doctor. They'll tell you how great it all is. So my supplement of the week is one I talk about all the time. It's vitamin D. And I know, you know, I've talked about this a lot, but there's so much new information coming out all the time. So having a vitamin D level below, and it's nanograms per milliliter, 20, but I'm just going to use 20, raises your risk of depression by 85%. 85% increased risk of depression compared to having a vitamin D level greater than 30, which is still way too low. Now, you'd think that if you went to a psychiatrist or a psychologist for depression, rather than SSRIs, which have nowhere near that level of effectiveness, it's not even close, they might want you to try a little vitamin D. And that's, of course, one of the key factors with seasonal affective disorder. Some of it's from the light changes, but, well, here, it's going to raise depression rates by 85%. We have lots of studies that show that, one in particular for breast cancer, I think I have 800 studies on one document here on my computer, but women that had a vitamin D level above 60 have an 83% lower risk of breast cancer than do those women with a level below 20 nanograms per milliliter. 83% lower risk of breast cancer. Also, people with a median vitamin D level of 41, which again I feel is too low, have a diabetes rate of 3.7 per thousand, while those with a median serum level of 22 have a diabetes rate of 9.3 per thousand, which means you lower your risk of type 2 diabetes by 60%. Amazing. Up to 59% of preterm births, which are responsible for 28% of newborn deaths during the first months of life, could be prevented simply by raising pregnant women's vitamin D to a level of 40 nanograms per milliliter. So let's take a look here. If you get your vitamin D up to 60 units versus 20 units, which costs, let's see, we sell a four-month supply for about $10. So for $2.50 a month, so for about 10 cents a day, less than 10 cents a day, you get your risk of depression to go down by 85%, your risk of breast cancer down by 83%, and your risk of diabetes down by 60%. And if you're pregnant, you get the chances of death of a newborn down by 28%. Pretty easy. We're talking 10 cents a day there. And as I mentioned before, you do some apple cider vinegar before your meals, and then 600 milligrams of baking soda three times a day, and take 10 cents of vitamin D. So we probably got about a quarter there, 30 cents worth of preventive. You're going to knock out over 50% of potential illnesses. Melatonin level, you know, inversely rises and falls with light and darkness. When it's dark, the levels increase. That's why you feel tired when the sun starts to set. And in the winter, that can be as early as 4 o'clock, right? But vitamin D can really help with that. But you might want to consider a little melatonin supplementation. I highly recommend that everybody listening to me get their vitamin D tested. It's less than $40 in most cases. You can order it yourself from Life Extension or tell your doc you want it added on. Many of them are willing to add it on but may not do it without your suggestion. And because everybody processes everything differently, including vitamin D. And so you really want to, this is something that's worth checking your levels at least once a year. And this is the right time to check it because we've now had a couple months of real darkness. And you should be at your lowest vitamin D levels right now. Now, researchers, it looks like 9,600 international units. I'm going to round that off to 10,000 IUs of vitamin D per day would get 97.5% of the population to reach or exceed 40 nanograms per milliliter. So if you don't know, and you don't have any serious disease that could be affected by vitamin D, like sarcoidosis, check with your health care providers. 10,000 a day is probably about the right amount. I have my patients do 50,000 once a week. It's a little easier, and that comes out pretty close to that range. Also, some other things, women with vitamin D over 30 had a 55% lower risk of colorectal cancer. So you're seeing it all across the board here. So definitely get your levels tested. And again, I could sit here and do 2 days worth of shows on just vitamin D. Lowers lupus levels. MS patients do much better with higher levels. Obesity, it lowers waist to hip ratio, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So bottom line, get your vitamin D checked and take some vitamin D. We're out of time. But real quickly, my book of the week is The Tao of an Uncluttered Life. That's T-A-O, Tao of an Uncluttered Life, so you can get uncluttered as you go into the spring. And the video of the week is Clear Clutter and Change Your Life Big Time. And that site is The Tao of Dana, T-A-O of Dana, D-A-N-A. All right? So thank you. Be happy, be healthy, and I'll be back with you next Friday. Thank you.
Across this great land, I stand in the sun. Under